Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing pretty good, Justin. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I started a job this week. That's kind of weird. Thought I needed some good health insurance and stuff, so went back to a day job for the time being. See how that goes.
Yeah, health insurance seems to be kind of up in the air anymore, right?
Yeah, so.
And we'd get into that, but we're not a political show.
No, we're not. So it's going good. I recently shared a very personal and somewhat embarrassing story on a little podcast called Squirm that is produced by another little podcast called They Walk Among Us. I also did a guest appearance on Sexland with Jeremy and Maeve. They were on my peripheral show, talk about sex positive stuff, dating, staying safe, kind of sex therapy show. I tell a story about how I met my wife and having a long distance relationship with her. So check out those two shows if you want to hear me talk about crazy stuff.
I want to thank everyone on behalf of Justin and I for all of your support on Patreon. It just keeps growing and we're working on new stuff for Patreon. So we're very excited about it. And we had our Michigan meetup. So we'll be planning another meetup at some point in the future.
And if you're going to buy a Casper mattress from us, you get $50 off. And whatever I said on the last episode, don't listen to it because I was wrong and I totally screwed it up because it was 3 a.m. when I recorded the ad. So you get $50 off. Deal. So what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight we're talking about Todd Kendhammer. And he and his wife, Barbara, had been married for 25 years. And early one morning, before 8 a.m., they're driving on the northbound lane of Highway M in Wisconsin, and something flies off of a truck that's going southbound and hits the passenger side windshield of the Kendhammer's car. They're driving a Toyota Camry.
It's a large metal pipe. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a 53-inch long, 10-pound galvanized steel pipe. And so Todd pulls off the road and checks on his wife. She's gravely injured. Tonight, we'll be talking about what happened, how this freak accident became so much more in a short amount of time.
Absolutely. This is a terrible tragedy for this man who's lost his wife. It's a very emotional event for him. Should we play that 911 call?
Hello. Oh, oh. Hi, this is the 911 center. You called me. I've got police, an ambulance, first responders headed to Emmonsburg and Cooley. I need you to tell me what happened. Slow down. Did the car work?
Need help.
Okay. And so your wife is injured?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And there was a car accident?
Yes, a pipe or something came through a windshield. A pipe did.
Pipe? Okay. And I'm going to connect you to medical information, sir. What's your first name?
Todd.
Todd, okay. And they're going to help you help her until somebody gets there, okay?
Hurry up.
And then you're going to hear a dial tone in the phone ring. Just stay on the phone. Let me talk first when they pick up, okay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Medical communication.
Hi, this is Lisa 911. I've got Todd on the line referenced that accident at Bergen Pooley in County M.
Yes.
He said a pipe or something came through the windshield and hit his wife. His callback number is the number on the header, 608-790-2360. So he needs some help with there. Go ahead.
Okay, we're going to tell me exactly what happened.
She got her, and she's hit in the head and in the throat, I think, in the throat or something. She's got blood coming out of her nose and mouth and coming for her, big and blue.
How old is she?
46.
Is she awake?
Well, no, I can't get her to her. She talked at first a little bit.
Okay, is she breathing?
No, I don't think so. No.
All right, sir. We do have help on the way. Stand
alone. Hold on.
You're in.
Get up the road.
Sir, I want you to stay right where you're at, sir.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to try to do something with it.
Yep, we're going
to... I'm going to put the phone down.
I'm going to... Can you get her out of the vehicle, sir?
I got her out.
Okay, I want you to lay her flat out of the ground.
I got her flat. I'm okay to stay, but I don't know what to do with this.
Okay, listen carefully. I'm going to tell you how to do chest compressions. Place the heel of your hand on her breastbone, right between her nipples.
I know how to do that.
The other hand is... Top.
I know how to do that.
Pump the chest hard and fast.
He's got blood coming out of his mouth.
That's okay. Go ahead and pump it twice per second and 2 inches deep, okay?
Okay.
Let the chest come up all the way between the pumps.
I'll come back in a minute.
Okay, keep going, sir.
She's got blood bubbling out of her mouth bad.
That's okay. That's okay. We're going to keep pumping the chest hard and fast, okay?
Pass out. I'm very
you're doing great,
cool.
sir. You're doing just fine. Keep pumping the chest hard and fast, 2 inches deep. Keep going, sir. You're doing great.
How far out are they?
One. They're coming as fast as they can, sir.
I know, but how fast are they?
They're coming.
I know, but I can't stay here much longer like this.
Yes, you can. You're doing a great job. You're doing what you can right now for her.
She's breathing out her ear, too.
Okay.
I thought I hit her hard when she whipped around.
Okay. That's okay. We're not hurting her at all right now.
Here comes somebody. It's fine. I don't know who he is.
Okay. Just keep going. Okay. Keep going, sir.
I am. Yeah, I'm coming.
I am coming.
They're coming.
You're doing great, sir. Keep going.
Okay, I gotta hang up. Here they come.
Stay on the phone until you get right next to her. Okay, keep doing CPR. You're doing great, sir. You're doing great. Just keep on going until they get right next to her and they'll take over.
I'm on the other side of the fire. I have to show them where I am. I have to show them.
They'll find you, sir.
Okay, they're here. I see them.
Okay, make sure they come right up next to her.
I got them. I can't. I gotta get them.
Okay. We want to continue with the CPR for her.
Stand by me. They went by me. Call them and tell them to come back. They went past me.
Okay.
Come on, Bert. I'm cool. We got them. Come on.
Fuck me.
Come on.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so we got him turned around. Keep going. Keep going.
Get him back here. Come on.
Yep, they're coming.
I don't see them. Which side of Bergen Coulee are you on, Todd?
There's only one Bergen Coulee.
No, which side of the road?
You don't see my car. Try to turn around.
Holy fuck. Are you hurrying?
They're coming, Todd. Keep on going. The best thing we can do for her right now is to continue with that CPR.
You got her. Here it is. Here it is. You're gonna be okay, Barb. You're gonna be okay. You're gonna be okay, Barb. You're gonna be okay. Where are
the first responders are on scene? I know that.
All right, sounds great. Thank
okay.
you.
Yep. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Come on. I gotta hurry up. Please hold him out, Bob. I got him.
I'm on the road.
Todd.
You can tell from the call that Todd is very upset, and he doesn't really want to hear the process. He just wants people to move. He wants emergency personnel on the scene now.
He's stumbling over his words. He's choking up. He's freaked out because his wife's dying in front of him.
This event is happening on September 16th of 2016. They've been married for 25 years. By all accounts, they were in love. And they were in love for a long time. And everybody that knew her had great things to say about Barbara. She worked at West Salem Middle School for the past 14 years in their food service program, also known as a lunch lady. Or if you go by their directory, she's under child nutrition. People that worked with her said that she always showed up to work. She didn't miss days. She was always on time. She took real pride in what she did. Now, this accident, let's go over the accident, Justin, because on September 16th, 2016, in West Salem, Wisconsin, this couple's driving along, and according to Todd, this flatbed truck is traveling southbound on Highway M, and this pipe goes flying off the truck and hits the windshield.
So he says this pipe falls off the back of the truck, and it doesn't even hit the ground. It just flies right through the windshield into Barbara. He says he puts his hand out to block it from hitting his wife. He pulls off to the side of the road. He says he has to punch the windshield again to get the pipe dislodged. And he opens up the passenger side door and he gets Barbara out of the car. And he says he does CPR for between 3 and 5 minutes and then decides to call 911. And that's the call you just heard.
The first person to arrive after he calls 911 is a paramedic. Todd had pulled off on this road off of Highway M. He had thrown the pipe aside. It ended up in the weeds off by the passenger side of the car. The paramedic approached and he saw Todd was at his wife's feet. And he could tell that she was seriously injured and didn't seem to be conscious. So she was taken to Gunderson Health System in La Crosse, Wisconsin, which is about a 15-minute drive from where they're at.
Now, the car was weirdly positioned on the road. It was the back end of it was kind of backed up into some tall grass, and the front of the car was angled out into the road.
Yeah, I guess it looked like he had tried to turn around or was trying to back up over, but then maybe the car slid off into a ditch.
He's trying to do a 3-point turn, but when he backed up way too much. Doesn't seem, I don't know. I think that I would have just pulled right off to the side of the road. And if I pulled off too much, I might have overcorrected and tried to get back onto the road. But that is not the case. There are not tire tracks leading off the road and then back onto the road. It's obvious that he backed the car off the road, which is my only explanation is he was trying to do a 3-point turn and on a 2-lane highway with other cars doing, 50 miles per hour. But this truck was going in the opposite lane. So this metal pipe had to have flown off the back of the truck and cleared most of a traffic lane to hit the passenger side window.
It's what they call a freak accident.
Yeah, this is some Final Destination stuff right here.
And that's what a lot of people talk about who have had discussions on this case. They say it's like Final Destination. It's some freak accident that would be in a horror film.
So a police officer is on the scene and is going to take Todd to the hospital. And they have a quick conversation while
Todd's going to the hospital to get some of his injuries looked at.
And of course, they'll ask Todd, what were you guys doing? Why were you on Highway M? What was the plan? And he said that he and his wife were going to take a look at a truck that he was planning to repair the windshield on because it had a crack in it.
So he's sort of a windshield repair guy on the side, and he had come across a truck windshield and a guy needed his replaced, and the guy's happened to be named Justin Heim. And so he's driving to Justin's house to replace this windshield. And that's when this accident happens. And it's just before 8 o'clock in the morning is when the accident happens.
Part of the interview was about why Todd and Barbara were on the road at the time, because she was supposed to be at work at 8 o'clock. Todd was working for a packaging and container company. Now, this was a Friday, and according to Todd, she could go into work late on a Friday. I mean, it kind of makes sense, right? Maybe it's the weekend. We'll be a little lax, kind of like
casual Friday.
Yeah.
And she has flex time she can use. So, you know, maybe that's it.
But Todd was also injured in this accident, right, Justin?
Yeah. He was scraped up and his hands, both of his hands and knuckles were bloodied really bad to the point where it looked like he'd been punching on a brick wall. If you go out online, you can see pictures of his hands and the car. But he has some scratches on him, on his chest and on his neck. And he will say that he works with glass. He replaces broken glass. So he gets scratched up when he's doing these jobs. He says his hands are all bloody because he punched the windshield to prevent the pipe from hitting his wife. And then he had to punch the windshield again to get the pipe dislodged. I would assume grabbing a hold of a pipe and pulling it out would be the preferred method, but he's saying he used his fists.
Or he could have just been really, really upset about what happened.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know if you've ever done this, but maybe if you're walking along and you trip over a chair, you might just in your head think, oh, I wish I could throw this chair. Like you're ticked off all of a sudden. Maybe he was just ticked off.
I've punched a wall or two in my time.
Now, law enforcement, they want to try and figure out what happened here because on the face of it, this story seems a little strange. Yeah, it's difficult for them to buy it. So they reach out and they ask the public, hey, if you saw anything, if you were out there on Highway M that day around that time, please contact us. They also locate some footage, don't they, Justin?
Well, and the reason why they're going through this is if you've ever had your windshield cracked driving behind, say, a dump truck or a construction vehicle, you know, the way a lot of the insurance laws are written, because the insurance companies really write the laws, not the people. But if the rock or pebble falls and hits the ground first, you're at fault for following too closely. But if that debris falls off of the back of the truck and hits your car without touching the ground first, then technically it is the truck driver's fault or the fault of the company that's driving the vehicle. So he says this pipe fell off the back of this truck and went directly through the windshield. So therefore, this driver is now technically semi-responsible for this accident. So they're trying to track down this vehicle, this flatbed truck that this pipe came off of, and investigate because a woman was seriously injured and this man is probably going to lose his wife. So they get some footage of the highways. They find exactly where his car was and they're looking for a flatbed truck that matches the description he gave. There isn't one.
Yeah, the footage came from the Wild Winds Ranch, and it's a horse lessons and camp. They had good footage of the road, I guess, and they were able to identify four different vehicles between 7:20 and 8:30 a.m. that day.
So they went way before and way after, at least 30 minutes on each side of this accident, and looked at all the cars traveling along this highway, and they did not see a flatbed truck. They saw a few pickup trucks, most of which had covered beds. So
pipes not flying out the back of those.
They did see also the Kendhammer's Camry. It verifies Todd's story of their being there, but not of the flatbed truck. So that might be an issue.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles, and immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
Also, the scratch marks on Todd more or less resemble fingernail marks because they're across his neck and down his chest. They look fairly fresh, not as if they were scrapes from a previous job that he claims they were from. Also, his hands are so bloodied that, I mean, I get it. If you punch the windshield, you use your primary hand, possibly your right hand. Both of his hands are completely bloodied up. Was he like duking out the windshield like it's a punching bag? This is weird. They also find that the trunk had been open. And they know this because it's really tall grass on the side of the road. And like we said, he'd backed the car up into this grassy area. And some of that grass was caught in between the trunk seal. So he had obviously opened the trunk and closed it. Weird. He doesn't mention that in any of his statements. And now they can't find this mysterious flatbed truck that this pipe has fallen off of. So they're starting to wonder and question his story a little bit.
And putting more pressure on the situation is the fact that the following day at 5:02 p.m., his wife Barbara dies from the massive amount of injuries and she was declared brain dead.
Police are struggling with this guy's story. Obviously, it has some holes in it, and I'm not talking about the one in the windshield. If you see pictures of this crime scene, you'll notice that the windshield has a hole in it where the pipe went through, and then another break in it, like another place where it looks like somebody either punched it or hit it with a pipe. So there's two impact zones on this windshield. One of them pierce the windshield and the other one just looks like you hit it with a baseball bat. Also inside of the car, there is glass on the seat, but there isn't any glass in the passenger side door. So, you know, the map holder, you know, where the handle is. Well, there's all this glass that's inside the car from this pipe going through the windshield, but there's glass on the seat. But if Barbara was sitting in the seat, the glass would have been on her. Probably wouldn't have settled in the seat. And there would probably be glass in the passenger side door. But there isn't in the passenger side door. What does that tell you?
They also find glass inside of the gear shifter. And investigators notice the only way that glass could have gotten in there is if the vehicle was in park. So the vehicle could not have been driving. It couldn't have been in motion when the glass shattered into the vehicle and gotten inside the gear shifter. It would be impossible.
Then they notice that there isn't any blood on this pipe. Now, I would just assume that a steel galvanized pipe punching a hole through a windshield would either impale the passenger or strike them in the head and cause some major damage. The face, the head, the chest, however this thing goes through. There's no blood on the pipe. And then they start looking at Barbara's injuries. What are her injuries, Aaron? What do they find on her body?
Dane County Medical Examiner Kathleen McCubbin conducted the autopsy on Barbara Kendhammer, and she found blunt force trauma to her head and neck, skull fractures. There were cartilage fractures, which indicated that she had been strangled. She had brain swelling. She had brain and neck hemorrhaging. So she was losing blood. Her face and her head had lacerations. There was one on her forehead. There were three on the back of her head and abrasions on her cheeks and contusions on her lips. And she had suffered nasal fractures as well.
Okay, so one's on the back of her head. Immediately, I got a red flag here. How does that happen? I could see a laceration on her forehead because that would just make sense. This pipe comes through and hits her in the forehead. Okay, got it. But the pipe comes through and hits her repeatedly over and over again and strangles her and then hits her in the back of the head? That's weird.
She also had some broken fingernails.
We'll come back to the fingernails because that's when it gets interesting. What else did they find around this car, Aaron? Because there was no blood on the pipe, so was there any blood?
Oh, yes. There was blood inside the car.
It's on the center console. There's some droplets.
There's blood on the floor and blood on the center console.
Yeah.
And there is glass present on the seat.
Now, I'll tell you what. I can buy that a pipe could fly off the back of a truck and hit a car and go through the windshield. I can believe that. It's possible. Things like this have happened. I could see there's glass on her, and as she's getting out of the car, that glass falls onto the passenger seat, and possibly all the glass just shot into the car and didn't fly into the passenger side door. I can buy that. But I can't buy all of her injuries. I can't buy a strangulation. And I can't buy where else they found blood on this car.
The rear tire.
The rear tire. Why is there blood on the rear tire? Who's bleeding? Who got out of the car and is bleeding on the tire? And the rear tire, again, this car is backed up into a grassy area. Now, he says he took his wife out of the car and performed CPR. But he would have done that on the side of the road, not in 4 foot tall grass where the rear tire was.
They tested it and it was Barbara Kendhammer's blood.
There's no reason for that blood to be there. Speaking of these tests they run, her fingernails, few of them had been torn off and they did scrapings under her fingernails and they found her DNA and they found Todd's DNA under her fingernails. Maybe she was scratching his back?
We've heard that one before, right?
Yeah. But being that we already see the scratch marks on his neck and his chest, I think we know where these skin flakes came from.
As usual, Justin has some phrases he likes, and one of them is due diligence. What does law enforcement do, Justin, when they check out his story about the pipe coming out the truck? As you said, well, it could happen, right? They actually ran tests.
Yeah, they ran tests dropping this pipe repeatedly out of a truck. And it's funny because there's, I think, 10 or 15 videos of it. Each video is 3 to 4 minutes long, and you have to sit there and wait till they drop this pipe out of the truck, like 2 minutes into the video, and it's like 3 seconds. Even when they kind of toss this pipe out of the back of a truck, it never gets to the passenger side window. More than likely, it would have hit the driver's side window. And with great luck and freakishness, it might have hit the center of the windshield, but it never made it as far as the passenger side. Again, these are two cars passing, going in opposite directions, and a pipe flying off the back of one and hitting the other one in the windshield. It just doesn't make any sense. It would make more sense if it hit the ground, bounced up, and then possibly hit the passenger side window, but not according to his statements.
So why do you think he said it didn't hit the ground? Is he just telling us what he honestly believed, or is there some other angle here? You already brought up the insurance.
Yeah. I think that this was his way of saying it would have had the most velocity, I guess. The pipe had some red or orange debris in it. Probably it was used as a plumbing pipe, and it had some rust or mineral buildup inside of it. And again, as we stated, no blood on the pipe, but it had this debris in it. That trunk, they kind of noticed that he never mentions that he ever opened the trunk during this whole incident, but they know the trunk was open because they found blades of grass in the trunk. What else did they find in the trunk, Aaron?
Something tying the pipe to his trunk.
Oh, would that be the orange debris, the mineral deposits, or rust from the pipe was in his trunk?
That seems very unlikely, doesn't it?
That's weird. I guess he thought he would keep the pipe, and he put it in the trunk and then decided not to put it in the trunk and threw it away.
If only he had said that, right?
So, were there any witnesses that were driving by and saw this terrible incident, Aaron?
Yeah, there were a couple of guys that worked together. One of them drove through that area, and he reported seeing nothing. His partner was about 10 minutes behind him and actually called him. And he called him at about 7:47 a.m. When he ends up going through this area where Todd had pulled off, he sees the car. He sees the Toyota Camry. And he slows down to what he says is about 5 miles per hour because he's concerned. You know, we already said the vehicle was pointed out. It had kind of backed up into a ditch.
Off the road, yeah.
So he's slowing down. He's looking. And he said he saw the passenger door open, but he didn't notice any damage to the vehicle. He's being asked, well, wait a minute. You mean you didn't see the windshield shattered at all? And he said, no. He said, if I had seen a shattered windshield, I would have stopped.
Because that was the whole point of him slowing down, is he thought there was other motorists on the road that were in need of help. And so he was driving slowly past this car to check it out. And he didn't see anyone. So abandoned car, maybe they ran off into the tall grass to urinate. He's just not getting involved because he doesn't see that there's any issue or problem. Just that there's a car off the side of the road with its passenger side door open.
So there's Gary Fossum and Randy Erler. Randy's the one who sees this vehicle and slows down, and he thinks maybe they need help, but there is no they because he doesn't see anyone. There's just this car backed up into a ditch with the passenger door open, and he described it as having no apparent damage, which if you look at these pictures again, he would have noticed this damage if it was present at the time he drove by the vehicle. There's not a lot of time here between the time that the Camry is seen on this footage and the time that emergency personnel and law enforcement arrives on scene. It's really not a lot of time. So for this Camry to be off the side of the road, that's where he was seen later. So that's when they stopped. It was after the accident, or should I say after the supposed accident.
Exactly. All they saw was a car off the side of the road and nobody around. So where is Todd and Barbara? Are they on the ground and he just missed them? I mean, he's doing 5 miles per hour. He says the windshield isn't busted. I'm assuming he's looking around the car as he's driving past. He would have noticed somebody on the ground.
they conduct interviews. They want a full picture of what was happening. They tried to find out, were they having any marital troubles, anything like that. No one reported anything like that, at least in the family. They also talked with Barbara's mother, Joyce Adams, who that morning did not receive a call from her daughter, which she said is very strange because every morning she would call her mom before she left for work. And that never happened. She did end up receiving a call, but it was from Sherry Elliott, who was Barbara's supervisor. And she was asking, hey, where's Barbara? She never misses work. She never comes in late. She's not here.
And this is like at 8:02. I mean, she's supposed to be there at 8:02. They're calling. That's how punctual she is.
Yep. In fact, at 8:06, they call another person to see if they'll come into work to cover Barbara's shift. So this is highly irregular, and it's backed up by interviews with her coworkers and other people at the school, as well as family.
And what about this Justin Heim guy who they were supposedly on their way to repair his windshield? That's his whole story, right?
It's Justin Heim's buddy who owns the truck in question. It's a Super Duty truck. And when Justin first talks to Todd about it, he says, hey, I know this guy. He's got a busted windshield. And he says, hey, what kind of truck is it? And he says, oh, it's a Super Duty. And he says, hey, I've got a windshield for that. Oh, cool. But months go by and this other friend never contacts Todd. Well, Todd follows up with Justin at some point in August, late August. I think it was August 26th. And at that point, according to Justin, it's pretty much this guy's just using it to plow. It's, you know,
a farm truck. He's not really needing to replace the windshield.
And this guy never contacts Todd to say, hey, replace the windshield. So at this point, it's very much they had a conversation about it. And that was basically it.
Todd's statement is he was going to Justin's to replace his windshield, not Justin's friend, not somebody else. I could see there's a little confusion there, but his statement's not adding up. And also, he wasn't on the way anywhere to replace any windshield, according to the guy with the broken windshield and Justin, who didn't have a broken windshield. So the whole thing's pretty much a lie.
Why would he be driving his wife to go look at a truck that he wasn't even given authorization to go check out? This is literally him making up a story, is what we're talking about here. And his wife, who never missed work, and he's saying, oh, she can go in late. They said that's not how she did things. She never did them that way. She was never casual about it. She always showed up to work.
And guess what wasn't in his car? Oh, that would be a Super Duty windshield.
Yeah, that's during that last conversation in August, he had told Justin that he no longer had the windshield. So you really wonder, why is he giving out this story when there's nothing to back it up except the players are real, but the situation is not what he paints?
Exactly. It takes the sheriff's office 81 days before they make a move on him, which I like due diligence. I like the fact that they want to get all their ducks in a row, but I think they could have arrested this guy on the spot. What do you think, Aaron?
Oh, yes, I agree. But I think one of the things they may have been working on is motive, because why would he do this? I mean, at this point, it looks pretty clear that Todd Kendhammer beat his wife to death. What's his motive here? Why would he do such a thing?
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't really have a history of domestic violence. Nobody has any insight into them having problems. So, yeah, this is sort of out of the blue.
And this is why when directly after the incident, everybody really felt for Todd. And all the news reports were saying something came off of a truck and hit the Kendhammer's Camry and ended up killing his wife.
Terrible tragedy. Yeah.
Why would they doubt this guy? Again, there isn't a pattern here. We can't go through and say this happened and that happened. And then he started taking out insurance. No, I mean, this is literally, he just has the worst alibi that we probably ever seen, right?
The dumbest I've ever seen.
This makes no sense. Again, Justin's already described it as, how does a pipe go through a windshield and cause injuries all over her head and her hands? It just doesn't make any sense.
And why does he have injuries all over his hands
the way they are. I mean, I could see a few scratches and nicks here and there, but you know, if you're blocking a pipe coming through the window, your hand's going to be open, not a fist. And why are there two impact zones on the windshield? Oh, that's because his first attempt to get the pipe through the windshield didn't work, so he had to do it a second time.
And his aim isn't very good.
No, he didn't hit the same place. I originally had thought that maybe he just snapped. Maybe he was arguing with his wife. He pulled over. It got out of hand. He went too far. And then this was a hurried sort of cover up for it.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
There is evidence that, as the examiner put it, that force was applied inside the vehicle.
Yeah. But once I find out that this pipe was in the trunk of the car and then he used it to punch a hole through the windshield, I'm thinking premeditated all day. And I no longer think that he just snapped. I'm thinking, why did he have his wife in the car with him, driving out into the middle of nowhere when she's supposed to be at work and there's no windshield to be fixed? He planned it. This is no longer a, oh, he just snapped, they got into a fight. This is, he was planning to murder her that morning.
He pleads not guilty. Now, I look at all this evidence that's against him, and he really doesn't have anything other than there's video showing he was out on that road. But I mean, they found him there. That's nothing. With all this evidence against him, he could have just said, I'm so sorry I snapped. I wish I could go back. I wish I could prevent this. But he doesn't do that. He says that he's not guilty.
He says that this was a freak accident. He sticks to his story, which absolutely makes no sense. None of the physical evidence matches up with it. I mean, he would have been better off pulling a Robert Durst and saying this was self-defense.
Isn't that screwed up?
Mm-hmm.
They say that Barbara's family supports him.
I hope not.
This isn't really a surprise. They can read the report by the medical examiner that performed the autopsy, but I don't think the family's doing that. I think they're literally just looking at Todd and saying, I know that guy. He's been in our family for 25 years plus. He wouldn't do this, right?
He's a good guy. He's not capable of harming Barbara. He loved Barbara. That mother loved her children. There's no way she would have killed them. I knew her. I knew him.
This is denial, if it's true. I even went out to the obituary page for her, and there's a lot of support in there for Todd. A lot.
There's a wrongly convicted website out there that talks about his innocence, and they say that the initial police report stated there were 4 impact zones on the windshield when there's only 2. I have no idea how that exonerates this guy. I don't know how that little technicality makes everything okay. It doesn't explain the scrape marks on him. It doesn't explain the strangulation that she suffered from. It doesn't explain how there's blood on the rear tire or how this pipe was somehow in the trunk of the car. There were blades of grass in the trunk of the car, or how another driver totally missed them on the side of the road while he was calling 911. But no, 4 impact zones to 2. Why were there even 2? This doesn't make any sense. This is the most idiotic guy ever. And I hope this wrongly convicted site pulls this article down, because I'm probably one of the most bleeding heart dudes out there that thinks the wrongfully convicted is the biggest injustice ever. First off, you have an innocent person that's sitting in jail and they shouldn't be. And then you have the actual perpetrator out on the loose. So I am a very big advocate for the Innocence Project, for wrongly convicted. But when they pull crap like this and put this guy out as some sort of poster boy for, oh, look how bad the system is. No, no, please don't. Don't do that. This guy murdered his wife. And this is disgusting.
Well, what bothered me most about the website, this wrongly convicted website, was that they said it makes no sense that he would somehow be able to beat her almost to death and then do a cover up.
I don't even know what that means. It's just a disgusting statement. He beat her with the intention of killing her. He took her out early in the morning and beat her. Probably was trying to drag her body off into the tall grass, but then came up with this other idea to cover the whole crime up with a freak accident. We don't know when this attack happened. Could have been as soon as they got in the car. Could have been at home. And then he put her unconscious body in the car and then opened the door and pulled her out, possibly beat her some more on the side of the road, and then started chucking this pipe through his front windshield. All we do know is it was him.
Yeah, we talked about the surveillance footage and there being four vehicles that are seen. And well, I think that first one was probably Gary Fossum. The second one were the Kenhammers. And then the third vehicle, Randy Erler.
Yeah, there you go.
So it's not really a busy road. If you're talking four vehicles in about 60 to 70 minutes, that's not very busy.
It's kind of remote. I looked at it on Google Maps. It's not city. There's not a lot going on out there. And it's not on the way to Justin's, really, and it's not on the way to her work. So
the surveillance video, I just want to go over this real quick because it shows you the time. On this video, when the vehicles are going by, it's 7:54 when a white pickup truck drives by. It's then 7:57 a.m. when the Kenhammers Toyota Camry drives by. There are two more trucks that drive through at 8 o'clock and 8:02 a.m. And anything else that comes up after that is an emergency or police vehicle. And they arrive, I would say, before 8:20. So I think it's about 8:18. It means that at around 8 o'clock, his vehicle was on the side of the road, but the driver, the next driver, doesn't see anybody. It's very, very strange.
He's arrested. The judge gives him a $250,000 bond. He actually gets a bail bondsman and is able to bond out. So he was out walking free for a while, meeting with his defense attorney, and I'm sure twisting and manipulating Barbara's family, talking about how innocent he was.
At one appearance in court, his attorney told the judge, Mr. Kenhammer is a lifelong resident of the area. He has a stellar work history, and as the state alludes to, he has no arrests, let alone convictions. Now, this is something that's come up many times, but it bears repeating. Just because you've never committed a crime in the past that anyone knows about doesn't mean that you'll never commit one. There's always that first time.
Okay. What did his coworkers think of him?
One person who worked with him said that he was a sexist, misogynistic pig.
Pretty much. Okay. Yeah, that's a good paraphrase of his statements. They thought that he didn't like women. He would make very disparaging comments a lot. And they didn't like him. Now, that's hearsay. I get it. But I wonder what his feelings are. He's a pretty good actor on that 911 call.
He has to be, right? Because when you look through all of the evidence, nothing backs up his statements. He's acting.
Exactly. And if any of his statements matched up, I'd probably give him a little bit of a pass. I could buy into a freak accident happening, but I can't buy into this pipe doing the damage to Barbara that it did. And I can't buy into all the other issues that we've run into. This is clear cut to me. I normally don't like to come out and say, this guy's guilty as hell, especially before the trial even happens. But I'm curious to see how this pans out.
Obviously, we don't know the motive here. We just know that Todd Kendhammer brutally murdered his wife and didn't want to go to prison. As far as motive goes, if his coworkers are correct, maybe he's been harboring anger for a long, long time, which culminated in this event. I agree with Justin. I think this is premeditated. I think it's something he's thought about for a while. The only real question I have is, why did he choose to stage it the way he did? This is horrible staging. No one buys it other than people who haven't investigated it. As I said when I talked about this on Twitter, I said I was shaking my head as I was taking my notes. It's a terrible tragedy. This poor woman loses her life, and her husband, who's responsible, takes no responsibility and concocts probably the worst alibi I've ever heard.
Of all the spouses, husbands, what have you, that are accused of murdering their significant others, this guy's the dumbest. He absolutely is.
This trial is yet to happen, but jury selection is supposed to take place on December 4th of 2017.
So if you're up in Salem, I would, and you're called for jury duty, don't tell them you listen to this podcast.
Jokes aside, this has been heavily covered by the media, and you can see the pictures, the documents, the autopsy information all online. It'll be interesting to see how they deal with that.
Yeah.
The sheriff's department fully believes that this is a murder as a result of domestic violence. I would think that there could have been some violence committed against Barbara by Todd in the past, but we just don't have any evidence of it. Sometimes people don't talk. Sometimes that abuse happens in silence. People don't always tell others about what's happening to them.
It's very possible that there wasn't anything reported, but who knows? This could be as freakish as something that he had planned out for a while. Barbara had no idea. Motive can be as simple as he's done and wants out of the marriage, and he doesn't want to go through a divorce. And he schemes up this ridiculous plan, thinking that this is going to be simpler and he's going to be this sympathetic victim that's lost his wife. Who knows? I have no idea what's going through this man's head. And it's very possible that there was abuse, but I can't really speculate.
What I would say is, if you are being abused, this is why you need to speak up. Find a way to let others know, because this is a real possibility in this case. This kind of domestic abuse that we're talking about needs to be reported more so that something can be done about it. We don't know for sure in this case, but if she was being abused, she didn't tell anyone.
So if you're in the States, the National Domestic Violence Hotline is 1-800-799-SAFE or 7233. What's our next episode going to be about, Aaron?
Yeah, so many people have written in and said, you guys don't have an ending. You don't ever say goodbye, nothing. You just cue music and you're out of there. Next week, we'll be talking with
a very requested author who has put out a documentary on his series of books.
His name is David Politis. So stay tuned for that.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.